Hello?
Hello.
All right. Looks like we're recording. Just double checking here.
Oh my God. Do you edit this afterwards or?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes a while sometimes because I'm either at work cooking or whatever.
Well, it sounds like your job is one of those high stress things.
No, it's not really. It's like a private club. So.
Yeah, but.
A lot easier than a real restaurant. Even though I have
usually this, well, my friends who are private chefs for wealthy clients, the richer the people are, usually the better they are. It's like their guests that are horrible. You know, like one of my friends is Gordon Getty's private chef, and he's great. She's, you know, she's like, he's the easiest person in the world, but all the guests have all these, you know, oh, I don't eat white food or, you know.
Yeah, we have this one guy, he likes to eat there at the club, and his wife has, like, some allergies, or she's allergic, like, to basically everything.
Yeah.
So we're always like, God, what the hell is she coming for? Why don't she just stay home?
I know.
That's pretty funny.
Well, this kind of, well, no, you know, living in France, like, nobody has, you never hear about these allergies. It's like, well, is this only in America?
Yeah.
I don't quite understand it.
I just want to welcome you first to the program. I want to ask you first really how you got started in the culinary world, because I always seem to find there's so many people that, you know, are like lawyers before or some other weird like thing rather than, you know, coming from a, you know, maybe middle America background or something.
Well, I sort of came, I went to prep school in Connecticut, you know, I wore a coat and tie every day and all that kind of stuff, wore L.L. Bean shoes. And then I went to film school in college. When I graduated from college, I didn't know what I wanted to do because basically being a film major is not, it's a tough thing. So I moved to San Francisco and I thought, well, I should just go work in a restaurant for a while and see what I want to do. And I thought, well, if I'm going to work in a restaurant, I should work in the best restaurant I can. So I went to Chez Panisse and they hired me. But that's the great thing about Chez Panisse. And that's the great thing about the old days when before all these culinary schools, when you just, if you were skilled, if you were a good, if they figured you'd have the skills to do it, you know, if you were instinctively a good cook, they'd hire you, and it's worked for them for a long time.
And what distinguishes it from other restaurants, do you think?
Well, the main thing that distinguished it, and probably still does today, is the owner, Alice Waters, doesn't care about making money. They spend so much money on ingredients, and they don't want to get caught up in the money thing, but money's no object. Like they'll get organic butter, you know, beautiful raspberries that someone will pick. They'll pay whatever just to have the finest food. And that's pretty refreshing for a restaurant or any business. They put quality first. And that's why a lot of cooks stay there for, you know, I stayed there 15 years. People stay there forever because, you know, where do you go after that?
And where did you go after that?
Well, I became a pastry chef at a restaurant called Monsoon in San Francisco for a while, which was owned by Bruce Kost, he's an American, but he specializes in Chinese and Southeast Asian food. And some people think that's kind of a weird allegiance, California cuisine and Chinese, but Chinese food is very into fresh. You know, if you go to Chinese people always go to the markets, they're always buying fresh food, they buy live fish. So it was interesting for me because I got to explore all these different things like tropical fruits, unique sugars and spices. And it was fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And I loved that. And Bruce Kost is the best chef I've ever worked with anywhere in my life.
I see.
Hands down.
And when did you decide to start writing cookbooks?
Well, when I was working at Chez Panisse, they had Lindsay Sheard, who was the pastry chef. She had written the Chez Panisse dessert book, which was still a great book. But we had, you know, as the years rolled on, we developed a lot more recipes in our repertoire. And I approached Alice about writing a Chez Panisse dessert book, you know, part two. And she said, well, she had a book project coming up, so I should just write my own book. So I did.
And how hard is it to write a cookbook?
Well, I always joke my next book is going to be a book on soups, because if you add an extra potato or an extra teaspoon of chicken stock, it doesn't matter. But when you're baking, the difference between a tablespoon and a teaspoon of baking powder is huge. And, you know, you also have to factor in that people don't necessarily measure the same way you do. So you have to be pretty specific, but your recipes also have to have latitude. You know, if somebody adds, you know, an extra quarter cup of flour, hopefully the cake will still taste okay. It might be a little more dense. So there's a lot of variables like that.
And who's your audience, basically, for your books, do you think?
My audience is people actually like, I always consider them people like me who like to bake at home, but don't necessarily want to spend 3 days making, you know, 14 layer cakes with different kinds of pastry creams and layers and rolling out pastry. I try to have all my recipes on one or two pages in the book. I hate flipping through books. You know, when I started writing cookbooks, I looked at books and recipes that I liked, and I kind of said, oh, I like recipe. I hate turning pages. I hate when a recipe says, see page 283, you know, to make the filling. It just, to me, it's annoying. So my books are sort of simple.
Some books, then, I think you'd probably say aren't as practical as they should be, then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the books that I like to bake from are from people like Nick Malgeri and Alice Medrich, whose recipes work, but they're not overly complicated, and you don't have to, you know, telephone somebody in Singapore to get the weird kind of salt that they tell you to use. Yeah, it's very accessible.
And do you think anybody could write a book about with recipes or a cookbook?
Well, it's interesting because now there's all these food blogs and everybody's essentially writing cookbooks. They're doing websites with recipes on them. And whether or not they're original recipes, I don't know. Some people do attribute them to other people and some people just do whatever. So now it's becoming much more democratic. The problem is, once again, when you make a recipe off the internet, does it work? Who is, you know, I saw a recipe the other day that was a recipe for some jam, which called for 2 cups of fruit and 5 cups of sugar, which, you know, was kind of a lot. So perhaps they made a typo. Yeah, you know, when you write a book, it goes through copy editors. I have recipe testers. And people, you know, copy editors go through and they say, you know, did you really mean to freeze this or did you mean, you know, this, you know, and sometimes they drive you crazy. But when you say, you know, chill, they go, does that mean in the refrigerator? Yeah. But that's the kind of questions people have when they open up a cookbook.
Linking with your site, I went to other people's sites, and it just like it just goes on and on and on, just like becomes really crazy with blogging. You could just stay on for hours. And I had seen one chocolate and zucchini, where this blogger, she's writing a book, and I've been thinking about it. I said, I've got so many like notes and recipes from like places I've worked and things we've done, and I said, I wonder if I should just put something together.
Well, that's what I mean. Blog. The good thing about a blog is you can just practice. I mean, I use my blog because I can write things that wouldn't necessarily go into a cookbook of mine. You know, I can write a poem about my dishwashing detergent in France, or I can talk about, you know, some jerk that cut me off, you know, when I was trying to buy my bread the other day or something.
I noticed that you have some pretty quirky posts about, like, trying on blue jeans and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, you can write that stuff on the internet. You know, I try not to insult anybody or, you know, say anything that's disrespectful, and, you know, because I am straddling two cultures here. But, you know, once again, to me, it's a sort of an expression of what I'm seeing around me and what I observe. I mean, the French have their flaws, and so do Americans. And I'm here to exploit them both. I do get angry letters from French people sometimes, which is pretty funny because most of my French friends like my site. But somebody wrote to me that saying, if I didn't like France, I should go back to America or I should leave. And I said, well, I've already left America, and if I have to leave France, where am I going to go?
Germany.
I guess I could go to Italy, but I'm pretty stuck. I'm here, so.
Yes, I just came back from Europe, and I mean, I love going there all the time. I was born there, and my family, half my family lives there. And, I mean, going to Paris is just, like, the best for me. So whenever I go to see your site, I try to pick up some hints and information so I can know my way around.
Yeah, I've been trying to add more tips about coming to Paris because a lot of people do come visit and they don't understand maybe how the ATMs work.
Oh, that's pretty.
You know, because Well, it is until you realize if you try, you know, if you, somebody came to visit me and her ATM card, she needed a machine that did letters. I was like, letters? In New York, I guess you can get letters for your PIN number.
Huh.
And in France, if you use your ATM card three times and you get the code wrong, it takes your card.
Oh, that's good.
And you don't get it back. And you have to call the police and you have to call these, you know, like you get to experience French bureaucracy.
So. Oh, yeah. I know that well. I dealt with the consulate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or people bring dollars and they think, you know, I can just use dollars. And I say, well, dollars aren't worth anything anymore.
Yeah,
nobody,
I know.
Yeah,
I
nobody
know that
wants
is a
dollars. Yeah. So it's kind of funny that people don't, you know, see what's happening.
Where's your favorite boulangerie in Paris?
Well, we had talked about Eric Kaiser, and he's a great baker. I think his breads are some of the best in Paris, actually the best in Paris. He's Alsatian, and his bakery is great. His pain au céréales with lots of grains is good. I love a bakery called 140, 140.
Uh-huh.
Which is in the near the Place Jardin. It's a very small bakery. It's just about the size of a countertop. And they have wonderful breads. And you have to kind of go up there and, you know, make the little trip. But it's great. And I wish it was right next door to where I live.
Yeah, I went to Kaiser, and I think I hit, like, every famous place by mistake because I forgot to, like, bring a list of places to go. But every time you walk into a street in Paris, you're like, wow, that place I know. And I tried to take pictures there, and they were like, nope, not here, buddy. Get lost.
Well, some places don't let you take pictures, and you just have to ask first.
Yeah.
I was actually at a chocolate shop yesterday, and I said, can I take pictures? And they said, sure. And I went to take a picture, and the guy came over, and he goes, no pictures. And I said, I turned around, and he was joking around with me. It was pretty funny. So, you know, one of the problems is a lot of people come into shops here and they just start snapping pictures and then they leave. And it makes the storekeepers feel like they're on display.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand that till I lived here and got to know a lot of the shopkeepers. And they were like, you know, it's okay if people take pictures, but, you know, we're a shop. And it's like going to someone's home and saying, can I take pictures? And, you know.
Yeah, I went to Poilin like 7 years ago and they were like, no, absolutely not. You can go downstairs, but you can't take pictures. And then this last time, they were like, yeah, sure, but nobody's down there, so it's already late. There's nothing to look at. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, it's still very interesting there. Well, a lot of Americans don't realize you can't take pictures in places like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's as well.
Oh, okay.
You know, you would never – people don't take their cameras to Safeway in America, but most stores, big stores, don't let you take pictures in there.
Uh-huh. So that's something new I didn't know. Well, it's funny.
I don't think it's new. I just don't think we know it. We think about it.
So. Yeah, well, I think they have this new policy, too, at Whole Foods where, like, if you eat something off the the display or the food, you'll, like, be busted, and they take a picture of you, and you got, like, a mug shot in their little
Somebody had written a blog entry about that happened to her, but, you know, that was in New York, and if, you know, 10% of the people who shopped in that store took something off the shelf and tasted it.
Yeah.
You know, you won't, you know.
There'd be some bacterial problems and issues, I think.
Yeah, well, it's gross. I mean, I see people, you know, sticking their fingers. They say, like, never eat food from salad bars. You know,
oh, yeah.
Experts are always like, you know, I do, but.
That's why I always think it's funny when they say sneeze bar. I kind of go, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, in France, it's like sneeze guard. You know, they grab things with their bare hands. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think you're educating people about food in France? And are you being educated yourself by showing them France?
One of the things I'm trying to educate people, a lot of people come here and they only want to go to the top restaurants. They only want to go to the top tables in France. And they want to, you know, they have this list that they get from whatever, from websites or guidebooks of restaurants and places to go. And I say, you know, a lot of the interest of going to France is sitting in a cafe and having a salad and a glass of wine. And, you know, you're not going to get any points by the Michelin people or, you know, it's not going to be in Zagat. But you get to experience France, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, I went to a restaurant the other night that was an old butcher shop, and they just served steak and French fries. And they had an enormous wine list, and it was the best meal I've had in a long time. I'm going to write about it on my site.
Uh-huh.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, and even like the small places that you would just say, oh, it's like a cheesy brasserie, like a diner here in the States, they're actually really good, and you'd be surprised what you can get.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Americans or visitors are afraid, you know, they don't speak French or they're going to be gruff, and they are. But, you know, they're gruff because that's the way they are. It's not because of you. So sometimes it's because of you, but you just give it back to them, and then they think it's funny.
Well, when you were in San Francisco, which is another really big food town, and now you're in Paris, what do you think the food differences are with American food and French food, for that matter?
There's an image that all Americans eat at McDonald's and that American food is really bad. And then you take a French person, I brought a French friend to San Francisco, and he flipped out at how great the food was.
Uh-huh.
And the quality of food and the breadth of ingredients you can get in America is incredible, especially in places like San Francisco, New York, where people are really into food. You know, the cheeses and the butters and things like that are not the same as France, but produce is amazing. You know, there's 12 kinds of spinach in the green market in New York, or, you know, in San Francisco, there's 14 kinds of strawberries. Whereas France is much more isolated and you can only get French stuff. Like you can't get Italian greens in France, even though we share a border, but you go to the market in, you know, Los Angeles and there's Italian greens.
Uh-huh.
And America is really a melting pot, too. You see a lot of ethnicity. France was, you know, a melting pot. They colonized a lot of the world, but it's, you know, they do French food really well in France. But it's hard here to find the same kind of fresh, vibrant food that you do in America.
So do you think it's still relevant today, French food?
Yeah, you know, France is a country that always looked to its past, and America is a country that always looked to its future. So France is reveling in the fact that they make really good duck confit, you know, French onion soup, all the classics, great baguettes, wonderful croissants. When they try to do new things, they often, you know, people don't really accept them as much. And whereas in America, people are more willing to experiment and try new things. Or Spain, look at Spain, what's happening in Spain. You know, they lived under a repression for many years, and now the chefs are just going crazy, you know, solidifying wine and, you know, all that.
Kind of like an Almodovar film.
Kind of, except
yeah.
A friend of mine ate at one of those molecular gastronomy restaurants and he got violently ill.
Ooh.
Because they didn't sous vide. There was the sous vide cooking,
uh-huh.
Which is very dangerous if it's not done correctly.
Right.
And
I think they're actually passing like laws here now to ban it in the city or something like that, because it really is, you got to be really careful with that stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, you keep an egg at, you know, 60 degrees, you know, for 3 days in a heater, and, you know, lots of interesting things can grow on that egg.
Have you been to Il Bulli or any of those laboratory places?
I've only been to one place in Barcelona. It's called Espai Sucre, which is a dessert-only restaurant.
Uh-huh.
They just serve 3 or 4 courses of dessert. And I kind of didn't want to go there for a long time because I thought it's going to be silly and stupid. But it was actually outstanding, and it wasn't pretentious at all. They were very friendly, and it was a place you go not to sit there and critique, and, you know, you don't want to write a blog entry about the food. You just want to eat it and enjoy it and experience it, and that was a really lovely place. It's a great place.
And now that you're in Europe, do you kind of like long – I mean, I think you say that you go back and forth from San Francisco and Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Which place is like really your place that you prefer, or is it?
Well, I live in Paris full time.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I don't live in San Francisco. I go back about once a year.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. People always ask me. They go, "Are you homesick?" I go, "Well, I am home." And you know, I don't like flying. It's I don't think anybody does. But so I don't try not to go back too often. A lot of people who read my site. It's pretty interesting. I lead culinary tours here in Paris, and people who read my site often sign up for them. And then they have read my site, and they'll show up with, like, a case of Rice Krispies,
ugh.
You know, saying, oh, yeah, I saw that post where you had all these marshmallows and you didn't know what to do. So it's really charming. You know, people bring me dried fruit from California and, you know, Scharfenberger chocolate, which is, you know, it's really cute. I love that.
Well, it's funny because when I was in France and in Switzerland when I was visiting my sister this year, I kind of went, and you were talking about how markets are so plentiful here and there's more, you know, ethnic stuff. But when I was there, I seemed to say, wow, everything's like so fresh. It's like straight from the markets. And when I came back to like my supermarket here in Queens, I was like getting stuff off the shelf and going, God, it doesn't even look fresh. It looks green. It's not even, you know, it's like picked, but not even ready to eat, you know? So after eating out of somebody's garden, I was kind of like, wow, I'm so disappointed.
Well, but the opposite side of that is if you go to a supermarket in Paris, the produce is disgusting.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's the worst of the worst. Whereas in America, at least, I mean, I'm speaking as someone from San Francisco, if you went to a Safeway or if you go to Whole Foods, I mean,
yeah.
it's magnificent. And, you know, once again, San Francisco has great farmers markets because it's surrounded by agriculture. In New York, it's a little different because there's not so many farms, you know, near New York, but, you know, things still exist.
Right.
But my dream is they open a Trader Joe's in Paris.
I was actually thinking of that, but calling it Trader Joe's.
Well, they're opening a Whole Foods in London, but London's very different. London's very, very Americanized, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just I don't want to insult anybody who's listening who's British. But it's much, you know, it's not as European as, you know, France.
Do Parisians still cook at home?
I think so. I don't think people have the time anymore, you know, but if you work, you know, your 35-hour work week, you don't have time to go shopping, you know.
Yeah.
By the time you're done, it's, you know, 7 o'clock and everything here closes at 8. So, yeah, people are eating frozen foods. There's a chain called Picard, which has, you know, stuffed quail with foie gras and, you know, thyme sautéed potatoes.
So do you think that's
not very good?
Do you think that's changing the whole French, you know, really culinary world in a sense? I mean, is it going to damage the great food that they do have there?
I don't know. There's a lot of people still eat out here. A lot, because in my experience and opinion, the restaurants are usually a good value.
Mm.
For example, this restaurant where I had this most incredible meal the other night, I mean, our bill for three people was like 130 euros.
Uh-huh.
And that includes tax, tip, everything, you know. Well, so, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to go out in New York and get a meal for, you know, at a fabulous restaurant for $40, tax, tip, you know, wine included. So that's that part of France. You know, I'm not worried about. It is home cooking. People just don't have the time. But, like, they don't bake at home. You know, you go to the store to buy a sack of flour, and it's, like, the size of an envelope. Because why would you bake? You have, this 1,263 bakeries in Paris.
Yeah. That's hard for us guys who are, like, home bakers who like to bake at home.
Well, the nice thing here is you can go to the supermarket and buy pâte brisée or tarte dough in the refrigerator section. They have like six kinds, and you can just, people do, they'll buy it, they'll take it home, and they'll make a quiche for dinner.
Yeah.
And the dough is not of, you know, the maximum superior quality that if you were making it at home, but, you know, it's fast and you're still homemade, you know, the filling.
Do they have like a chef network, like a food TV here in America?
There's two of them, but they're on the cable systems, and you have to subscribe.
Okay.
It's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And one of the TV networks is really good, where they go out in the fields and they show the producers, because France is a very agricultural country. And I don't get that station, unfortunately, but it's very fascinating. And the other one is a little more commercial. They have chefs, you know, smiling and waving at the cameras and. Which is not a French characteristic to begin with. So, but now they've changed. They keep changing the cable. There's only one. It's a monopoly here in France.
Why do you think Americans and French have a hard time accepting each other?
Well, there never has been a Franco-American alliance of families. Like a lot of Italians, their families moved to America, you know, 40 whatever years ago. And so people got to know Italians. Italians set up communities in America. And you go to Italy and they go, oh, yes, my brother Giuseppe, he lives in Brooklyn, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas French people there was never like a French community in New York. You know, they didn't have their own neighborhood.
Yeah.
So people didn't get to know French. French people didn't get to know Americans except what they saw on TV. And if you watch American television, it's not a pretty picture. So a lot of in the last 10 years, a lot of French people have gone to America, and they really like Americans. They go, "Oh, it's so nice. It was so fun, though. It was so charming. It was cute. People were funny, and blah, blah, blah." And, you know,
and
French people love Americans.
How did you decide to relocate there?
Well, it was kind of at a time in my life where I could do it. I was writing books, and I thought, well, I could write them in France. So I did it.
that's a good choice, I think.
Well, yeah, it sounds easier than it is, but if people read my site, I wrote a little about the process a few weeks ago, what it's like to move here and get a visa.
Oh, yeah, I
and
saw that.
It's a pretty horrible, I mean, I won't go on, but it's a pretty demeaning, horrible, frustrating, awful process.
Do you think the food world is like a big gossip column today?
You know, it might be. I'm not involved. Fortunately, I'm not involved with that part of the food world. I'm not in with all the celebrity chefs. I don't live in New York. Like I said, I worked at Chez Panisse, where we were much more concerned with just making good food rather than getting a TV contract.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sort of more part of that world where people are into food because they're into food. It's like, I like chocolate because I actually like chocolate, not because it's going to make me popular or, you know, I'm trying to sell something. It's just, that's who I am. And so I don't know. It's hard to elaborate. You know, the Food Network's really changed things, and people worship all these people on Food Network, and they sell tons of books. And part of me says, well, it's a really good thing because people are buying cookbooks. You know, a lot of people on Food Network are probably really nice people. I've met some of them, and, you know, they're just normal people that happen to strike gold.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, I had dinner with Emeril Lagasse one night, and I used to watch a show, and, you know, the first thing I would do is run for the dial to turn the volume down. And then I met him, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy's really, really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just, you know, he's a lovely man. Gold.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, I had dinner with Emeril Lagasse one night, and I used to watch a show, and, you know, the first thing I would do is run for the dial to turn the volume down. And then I met him, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy's really, really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just, you know, he's a lovely man.
Yeah, I'm trying to get all those star chefs to, like, get on my blog, but they're just so far out of the reach, so maybe this will help.
Well, that's, yeah, and it's kind of sad. I mean, someone had written something sort of nasty about Jamie Oliver on a blog recently, because I guess on one of the Food Network websites it says you can't adapt or use any of his recipes on your, you know, it's illegal or whatever. They said it was a warning, you couldn't do it. And everyone was freaking out, and they're like, oh, I'm going to tell, you know, he's a terrible person, and who does he think he is? And I'm like, I'm sure, you know, I don't know Jamie Oliver, but I'm sure he's like a nice person, and he helps, you know, kids. You know, he has all these programs, and he probably had nothing to do with that, and yet he was getting all this flack for it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, don't use his recipes then. He doesn't want you to. It's his, you know, or Food Network.
It's funny because I just read something about his whole thing about food lunches at schools, and then how these men were like sending junk food to their kids. It was kind of bizarre.
Oh God.
Yeah. Pretty nasty stuff.
But it's hard, you know. People don't realize what it's like to be a celebrity. And someone like Rachel Ray, you know, she's got to be nice all the time. She can't tell someone she's having a bad day, and then they write about it on their blog. Oh, I met Rachel Ray and she was really nasty to me, and you know, if she has a migraine or, you know, what, I'm just making all this up. But people don't realize what it's like to be constantly, you know, just everybody wants a little of your attention, and you don't have time for everybody. So people who are celebrities, they want to, you know, they want to do the Tonight Show, you know, they want, you know, they do want to do all that stuff.
Do you get that with your blog audience too?
Get what?
You know, badgered or bothered all the time.
I get some. Most people are pretty, I've kind of learned how to, I mean, I answer all my emails, and most people with blogs do. And, you know, people, I've gotten some really interesting requests, like really long-winded emails. And I usually, now I save them because someday I'm going to publish them because they're too funny. And people just don't realize when they say, I want to go to culinary school, can you give me some tips? You know, it's like, well, you know, people write books about what it's like. So, you know, I usually answer people, or I'll do a blog entry about it. Someone had asked me about getting a visa to France and how much fun it must have been meeting all the people at the town hall.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you know, French bureaucracy is famous.
Yeah, the best is trying to get directions from a police officer for to go to Poilins. That was pretty funny.
Oh, they didn't. Usually people in France love to give you directions.
No, this guy looked a little bit sour and said, just keep going straight and then take a right. And I'm like, okay.
Well, in that neighborhood, they're, you know, they're kind of burned out because there's so many tourists over there.
Yeah, yeah.
But people in France, like, they're like, I will take you there. Come with me. You know, oh, Paulin, yes, I will go. We'll have bread. It's, you know, you're
yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody always has a real bad impression, and I always try to say, no, man, French aren't like that. Are you kidding me? My mom's French. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're nice. It's just, you know, it's like New Yorkers. People have this image that they're nasty.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, some are and some aren't.
What's
yeah,
your favorite dessert?
You know. Well, this week it's brownies because I've been making them all week. I was making dulce de leche brownies,
uh-huh.
And I love brownies. And I probably should say, I also love floating islands, which they serve in France. And you don't see them as much anymore, and I don't know why I like them. You know, it's a pool of really cold creme anglaise with poached meringues and caramel sauce and usually almonds, and I love that.
And
I love caramels.
And I notice, I mean, you're like a big chocolate freak. So what is it about chocolate that you love so much? Is it the taste, or is it the serotonin effect?
Well, I like chocolate because you can eat a little bit of it, and it's really satisfying. I mean, whenever I have anything chocolate, I feel really satisfied. You don't need to have a lot of it, and you just have a, you know, eat a tablet of chocolate, and it's great. You know, I was touring. And also the culture of chocolate to me is really fascinating because the people that are involved in it, the chocolate makers, the chocolatiers, are so skilled, and they have so much knowledge. You know, I interviewed Frederick Schilling recently from Dagoba on my site, and he's fascinating. I mean, the guy goes down to the jungles and, you know, meets the natives, and he talks about beans and, you know, how they're harvested. And I mean, those people are really, they're really like sort of, they're passionate, but without the bravado that the wine people have.
Yeah, I was reading about that on your site, and I had been in Ecuador with my wife, and I've been around to some plantations where, like, they had cocoa beans, but they had been, like, eaten by these, like, pests. So I was interested in what you were talking about, the how they spray the stuff down there. It's pretty interesting.
Well, I had also read on another food website that organic cocoa was not as good. A lot of pastry chefs wouldn't use organic cocoa because it wasn't as good because the beans were younger.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think that was true, but, you know, I asked Frederick during the interview and he answered, and, you know, his chocolate, if you taste Dagoba chocolate, it's very good.
Uh-huh. I've had it. Actually, my wife loves the lavender that they make. The one. But for me, you know, she uses lavender in virtually everything, so I was like, God, it's like a bar of soap, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing a new bar with bacon in it.
Oh.
And he's sending me some. And he's also doing one called Salt and Nuts.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've known Frederick for a long time, and he's a really, you know, I knew him when he's starting the company. And, you know, same with Scharfenberger. I didn't know that much about chocolate. And then as I got to know John and Scharfenberger and Robert Steinberg, the owners, you know, I learned how chocolate was made, and I hung out with them a lot. And the whole culture is, you know, chocolate's a very earthy food.
Right.
It's pretty unprocessed. You know, it's basically beans, you know, picked, ground, dried, and smashed up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't put a lot of chemicals, you don't put any chemicals in it. And so, you know, once again, I'm, you know, I'm a food person. I'm very fascinated by food, and it's a pure food. And
well, can you distinguish the taste of different brands, or even from the different countries that they're processed?
You kind of can. There's a lot of people that say, "Oh, I only like Venezuelan chocolate," which is kind of like saying, "Oh, I only like American beer." You know, there's good beer in America, and there's bad.
Uh-huh.
So I try to tell people just buy what, you know, whatever tastes good to you is the best chocolate. There's great chocolate. People say, people ask me all the time, what country makes the best chocolate? I'm like, well, I don't know any country that makes chocolate. I know places in countries that make chocolate, but
Well, my sister's Swiss, and I kind of like told her once, oh, I really like Belgian chocolate, and she almost like choked me to death. But then she came around and she said, yeah, you're right, it is pretty good too, you know.
Well, there's an image a lot of people like Belgian chocolate, or they'll say, oh, Swiss, French people love Swiss chocolate because they eat Lindt chocolate, which is pretty good quality. It's industrial
mass-produced
chocolate, but it's very good. The plain chocolate is good. But there's good French chocolate, there's great chocolate. I love American chocolate. I love Scharfenberger chocolate, I love Dagoba chocolate, I love Higatard chocolate.
Well, it's kind of
And some
sad though
other
that,
countries.
my wife brought back some chocolate from Ecuador, and I guess they're trying to make the processed chocolate like European style. And I opened the package, and it was like really old. It had that like white streak, and I said, "Oh
Yeah.
man, how totally disappointing!" So I'm like,
Well, that's the problem with those countries. They don't have the funds sometimes.
"Yeah, it's kind of sad."
Tilray makes their chocolate
Oh, okay.
in Venezuela, and they've had a lot of trouble in the last few years because, there's been political unrest there.
Mr. Chavez.
Well, yeah, it's difficult. There's another company, Omahenne. They make their chocolate in Ghana, and I talked to the guy that owns the company, and I said, it must be hard to make chocolate. And there was like a pause for like 30 seconds. He's like, you have no idea what it's like.
Yeah, which is kind of a sad thing to say because, I mean, they're producing the flavor that we love so much.
Well, that's, when I tell people, I said, most people that grow cocoa beans have no idea what chocolate as we know it is like, because first of all, it's about 110 degrees there. So
Sure.
it's hard to make chocolate, and cocoa beans get shipped all over the world, so.
Yeah, it's funny because I was reading about chocolate on Wikipedia, and they were talking about how they were making these Hershey bars for the soldiers in the wars and stuff, and recently they were making for Desert Storm these like chocolate bars that wouldn't melt, and it sounded so disgusting. They said most of the soldiers said it's crap,
Yeah, well, that's,
and my brother-in-law was in the Swiss Army, and he was like going, oh, you got to try ours, we've got tons of them. So he comes out with this stuff, I'm like, oh, they're awful, you know. He goes, oh no, they're really good.
there was a book called The Emperors of Chocolate written a few years ago about the Hershey's and Mars, and they talked about the war in Kuwait that happened at the time, and how a lot of Mars is the largest, was the largest privately held company in the world. And they had developed all these products for the Middle East. And then when there was some political unrest, Mars kind of was concerned that they were going to lose their share, that part of the market that they had spent a lot of time developing. So it's a pretty fascinating book, The Emperors of Chocolate. But that was kind of one of the reasons I wrote my book, The Great Book of Chocolate, was because there's so many myths. People say, well, I only like 80% chocolate, or I don't like milk chocolate, or what's white chocolate? And I wanted to answer all those questions. So, and that's what I found fascinating about the world of chocolate. You just start talking to people and you learn a lot because the people are really passionate about what they do.
Yeah, I know a chocolate maker here in the city. I'm just waiting for him to reopen his place, Eric Girard. And he was in
Don't know.
Brooklyn for a while, but he's moved to Long Island, I think. But hopefully we'll get him on the site and maybe post some pictures and stuff. But I got to step over there one day and just hang around with him. But he's pretty secretive too.
Well, they kind of have to be, some of them, but
Yeah.
like Jacques Therese opened a new place in New York and it's all open. There's big windows, and I didn't really taste anything that he was making, but he's pretty open about what he does.
Yeah,
He's
I went there. It was really good. We had some chocolate stuff, and it was good, to say the least.
Well, New York is kind of, I mean, I know the people at Vosges Haute Chocolat, Katrina Markoff, and she's really into all these flavors and the sensuality of chocolate. But there's places now all over New York. I do chocolate tours in Paris, and people have contacted me about doing them in New York. And I don't know how to get people around New York like I do around Paris, so that's, I haven't really given it much consideration.
Yeah, this guy Eric that I know, he makes chocolate with curry in it. I was like, God, that's got to be totally bizarre, but it was really good. It was just went together
Well, good.
perfect.
Yeah, people who do it well, put things in. There's somebody here in Paris that puts cheese in his chocolate, and I resisted for years buying them, and I tasted them once, and they're actually really good. I was like, wow. And I was really surprised. And it takes someone who's really good to do it right. And I guess it's kind of like anything, a great chef can do make something, anything taste good.
Do you think that desserts can kind of overpower a meal and not really be in harmony with, like, if you're going out for a food experience at a restaurant?
Well, fortunately, when I worked at Chez Panisse, the dessert was always decided after the chef gave us the menu. So we'd look at the menu and it's like, okay, well, it's going to be rich. It's going to be, foie gras, and then they're going to have beef, and then there's going to be cheese. So dessert needs to be light. It needs to be like tangerine sorbet or a passion fruit souffle. So I'm used to thinking of dessert as being not, the nail in the coffin, but a nice way to end the meal. Last night I made dinner for some friends. We had veal, like a roasted veal with potatoes, and I just made a plum sorbet with baked plums and raspberries and cardamom, and it was really good and simple. And it's kind of like, that's how I like to end the meal. Not, you don't want to just bash people over the head. You want to send them out happy.
Do you think that desserts in Europe are less sweet than the taste that we have here in the States?
That's kind of what they say. A lot of people say, oh, French desserts or the French taste is much less sweet. But I think in general, it's hard to generalize. Because once again, this is image of America as being, the land of the Cheesecake Factory. But then you go somewhere and have a Claudia Fleming dessert, and it's like poetry in your mouth. It's a light, delicious, fabulous flavor. So, I think generally, I think American desserts, are a little overwhelming. But I hate to generalize because then I get nasty emails.
Not a good
Well, I don't mind discussion, but I write 90, 99% of my site is how fabulous France is, and if I write one thing negative, then the barrage of emails come in. How could you say that about France? She is the mother country. Like,
Of
okay,
food.
calm down. It's a great country, but get over yourself. And that's what I mean, that's the thing I miss about Americans. Americans have a pretty good ability to laugh at themselves. You
Self-deprecating.
watch, you watch Jay Leno, and he's making fun of everybody on TV, and people are laughing, and there's some serious stuff going on, in America, and it's not all necessarily fun and games, but that's a quality of Americans that I do miss.
Well, what I really like is your kind of like your road trips that we describe going to Brittany and stuff, and just all the bountiful information that you give us. So that's really good. And especially I got one of your books and kind of like peered at it and said, well, I'm gonna have to get this, and because it had a recipe for like a ginger cake with
Oh,
molasses.
yeah, that's the famous. Everybody loves that.
Oh my God, it reminded me, it's kind of a weird thing to say and I hope you don't take it wrong, but I we used to make a ginger molasses cake in the army when I was in the army, and one of my favorite things to have it was a lemon curd, because for some reason the two just go perfect together. So I made it and I tried it at work and I guess they liked it, but I guess it was more for me than anybody else.
That's a great cake because it's really easy to make and it lasts for, several days, and it's a lot of ginger. I mean, you probably grind it up in the food processor. But when I wrote the book, I said, chop it with a knife. To me, by the time you get out the food processor, plug it in, find the lid, put it on. But now more people use food processors, and I tell people, oh, chop it up in the food processor.
Scariest part of, on going on your blog is I always keep finding like books that you like recommend and stuff, and I have absolutely no space on my shelves anymore for books. And when I was in
Well,
France and Europe, I just kept buying books. I was like losing it.
I'm like that too. I only recommend a book if it's something that I really recommend, because I know people have a limited amount of shelf space. And I figure people can look at it or not, or if they want to get it, they don't have to. Or, but that's, you were talking about my profiles, so and that's, when I moved to France, I was hoping to write more for magazines. But the magazines were kind of, it's very hard to, I mean, the magazine business is not so healthy in America. So I was finding it hard because I wanted to write about stuff that was not traditional, like, oh, we had the most lovely tart at this bakery. It was really pretty. And they wake up and the women, rub their hands full of butter and flour. I wanted to write about people who make caramels and, you know, do all sorts of really cool stuff. Well, it was interesting because there's a chocolatier and caramel fellow here who's become very famous. He doesn't have a store. He sells just to restaurants.
Mm.
But Americans are flipping out about his chocolate and his caramels because somebody else I know wrote about him. And Americans, if you tell them they can't have something, something's not available, they're like, they don't believe it.
You got a special order.
There used to be able to go online and buying it or special ordering it. And when they're told, nope, you cannot get it at all, they flip out. Like the Spanish ham, people just, you couldn't get it in America.
Yeah.
Until recently, one company actually had the FDA certify their place in Spain. And it was worth it for them because they're charging a fortune. But anyhow, he went to America because people wanted him to open a shop in New York. And he came back and I was talking to him and he said, you know, I can't do it, I don't think, because the butter is so bad. And I said, well, it's not that bad. And I said, well, compared to French butter, it is. You know,
yeah.
America has other products. I mean, there's good butter in America, but it ain't France.
No, not at all. And it was interesting about the salt de Gijon. I was just like, I had read a book about salt, and every time I see something about salt or you look at a name in Europe, it's related to salt, you know, so that was...
Well, it's one of the great bargains in France, and people come over here and they go, $5 for salt? And I'm like, you know what? It's going to change your life.
Yeah.
You know, have one less mochaccino and, you know, buy a year and a half's worth of salt.
I remember being in the station going back from Paris to England, and some American guy complaining, going, God, I hate this country. It's awful. You can't get any good food here or anything. There's no McDonald's. And I was like, is this guy nuts? I should have kicked him, you know, and said, shut up.
Well, you know, a lot of people, once again, a lot of people come here and they don't go to the real restaurants.
Yeah.
They go to places that maybe the guidebooks tell them to go. And
yeah.
That's why, like on my site, I try to write about places that, you know, maybe have too much smoke and maybe people might feel uncomfortable going to. But you're not uncomfortable, but just be like, oh, you know, David Leibovitz said to go there. But then on the other hand, I get people that go to my site, and they write me, they go, we went to France, we went to all the restaurants on your list, and it was great because we had a great meal everywhere. It was inexpensive and so on and so forth. So I
get
a halo for that.
We took my mom back, and she hadn't been to France in 37 years. So she was like, oh, I know this place and that place. And when she got there, she was like totally lost. So basically, we went by the skin of our teeth and just kind of walked around, bumped into places, and that was, like, I think the best thing. Just, you know, hey, try anything you see and see if it's good.
Well, plus, if you're French, you have an automatic in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a private club.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's like that old Eddie Murphy thing on Saturday Night Live where he dressed as a white guy and went out, and people were like, you know, he went on the bus and they were like, pay? Who pays? And it was like a big party.
Yeah.
And they'd see a black person and everyone would sit down really fast and act normal. And
yeah, because we went to this restaurant, Relais d'Entrecôte. By chance, we were sitting at the place across the street, and, you know, the menu was a little frou-frou, and but the wine was really good. And then we said, you know what, let's just go across the street. This menu looks a little pricey. So we crossed over, and we got in, and my mom sits at the table. She goes, oh, can we see the menu? And this little Parisian waitress who had, like, a really squeaky voice goes, oh, there's only one menu. And she described everything. And my mom looks at me, and she goes, what did she say? I said, Mom, you're French. Don't you understand? She said, walnut salad, steak, and fries. And she's like, oh. And so she was shocked. But it was a great meal, and it just was, like, worth it. Totally delicious.
Well, also in France, if you show any interest in food, they love you.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, you know, go to places and talk to people. In America, we're not used to talking to people. We go in, you know, we buy what we're leaving, and we get out. But if you start showing, you know, if you say, oh, you know, these chocolates here are beautiful. Do you make them?
Yeah.
Be like, yes, you know, I've been making, you know, and you start. People like, Paris is like a big village, and it's like America was 30 years ago where you had to meet your butcher, you had to meet the baker.
Mm.
And once you do, it's a much different city.
Yeah.
And I would tell people, I said, when you come here, go to the same restaurant like 3 times that week, because the second time you walk in, they'll remember you and you'll be like their best friend. So they really value relationships here much more than we do in America.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard. And I mean, my neighborhood in Queens here, we've got like 2 restaurants in the block, and, you know, one of them's pretty good. But, whew, man, it's like desperate here, and I kept going, God, I miss Paris. I want to go back and eat like in every single place I saw.
Well, the good thing about Paris is there's a lot of flights here, and it's a very accessible city for visitors.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I love when I do like my tours is I really get to show people how nice French people can be. We go into spice markets and olive oil shops and meet the owners and meet the chocolatiers or who's ever, even the people that work there. I mean, they're not just employees. They know they've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a much different experience for people. And they're always like, wow, that was so interesting.
Well,
by the end, I'm exhausted, you know, from talking to everybody. But
when's your next book coming out?
It's supposed to be coming out in April or May of 2007, and it's called The Perfect Scoop, and it's a big book of ice cream.
Mm.
And I can't wait because there's not a lot of books on ice cream out there.
No, there aren't.
There's a few. And now ice cream makers are really cheap in America. I mean, you can buy one for $50.
Yeah.
Or you can buy one with a refrigerator in it. I have a Cuisinart one, which has a refrigerator in it, and they sell them for $200.
Yeah.
So you don't have to chill anything. You just pour the mixture in and turn it on, and 30 minutes later, it's done.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It does a great job.
Oh, well, I'm going to look forward to that book for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I love that book. I can't wait for it to come out.
And are you writing something else besides that coming out, or?
Well, I'm working on a proposal for another book, perhaps something to do with Paris.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to be just another whiny American in Paris. I want to talk about something here and, you know, make a cultural sort of connections.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to sort of feature Paris without being too reverential. I don't want to, you know, I don't hold it on a pedestal, but I also don't want to, you know, say, oh, you know, I don't want to be another book about some American that came here and, you know, had trouble with the bureaucrats and, you know, punched out somebody on the street.
Well, I was a little biased, I think, just because I love the food, so mm-hmm. I couldn't complain.
Yeah, well, you know, once again, if you come to France and you are into it, they love that.
Yeah.
And if you come here expecting to find, like, a lot of ice in your Coke or, you know, air conditioning or things like that, you're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like home. I always tell people, if you want to be comfortable, stay home.
And you get ready to walk a lot. Or
I walk
metro.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone asks me, they go, how come French people are so thin? And I'm like, well, when was the last time you walked home with your groceries? Then, you know, it's true. Man. People here walk.
Yeah.
They don't eat as much, so.
Too many cars, though, I think, in Paris.
Yeah,
it's kind of like New York.
It's become a problem. And the mayor's trying to alleviate that by redesigning the streets,
uh-huh.
making them one lane and adding bike lanes and bus lanes, and it's infuriating the people here.
Smoking in public places.
Well, yeah, that's supposed to happen January 1st.
Oh, boy.
And I keep thinking it's not going to happen because usually they give those laws like 2 years.
Yeah.
But it's been brought up here in Parliament, and it kept getting pushed aside, and apparently it's going to happen.
Yeah.
In restaurants. They're going to let people smoke in tobaccos and things like that.
Oh, that's good.
Great.
Because I think
it's
kind of gross. You know, you can't smoke in a restaurant, but you can smoke and choke everybody in the street, so.
Well, I don't mind smoke,
yeah.
But I've sat next to people who French people tend to chain smoke when they go out to eat. They'll have like 3 cigarettes between the courses, literally, and I'm not even exaggerating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was having lunch the other day, and this guy next to me said, do you mind if I smoke? And I said, well, can you wait until I finish my entree? And he started, like, sulking. And I'm like, well, why did you ask if I minded? Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But like I said, I don't mind smoke, but when it's right next to me going in my face while I'm eating. And so I think that the balance, you know, letting people smoke in the tobacco is a good idea.
Yeah.
Or if you're sitting outside on a terrace, you know, people can smoke.
And where are you going to go for lunch today?
You know, I have a friend who's here from the California Wine Board, and he's coming over in about 20 minutes. And I don't know where we're going to go. Somewhere in my neighborhood. I ate way too much chocolate yesterday because I took a tour of a chocolate shop, a private tour yesterday, and the guy kept giving me tons of chocolate. So I kind of had a little too much chocolate yesterday.
So it'll be something light then.
Well, something that involves a lot of red wine, I think.
Oh, good, good.
Or maybe we'll go to Le Vert Volé, which is a great wine bar up in the north at the canal, which I like a lot, which you should come to next time you're here.
Definitely. Well, when I go next time, I'll have to take one of your tours.
Okay.
Okay.